VanWee Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. That can only mean this is the VanWee Financial Hour. I'm Steve VanWee.
And I'm Adam VanWee.
And we are here, as always, live and in color. If you stare very closely at your radio dial, you'll see Adam on the left and me on the right. All kind of chipper and full of things to say because this has been a very exciting week. The only thing missing this week was profit.
Not necessarily. Depends how you're invested.
I guess probably you're right about that. But it was an extremely exciting week. I was thinking about this morning. A lot of you know me, and a lot of you know that I'm a lot like Lily Tomlin in one respect. I spend my life in search of the possibility of intelligent life on the planet, and I'm failing. And I can prove that to you in the course of the next hour. It's just doesn't exist anymore. It's incredible. But there'll be plenty of time for that.
Yeah, they say the circus is dying. It's not
doing
well, but it's just
Barnum
moved.
And Bailey, maybe, but
it's
not
moved
the circus.
To D.C.
Yep. Anyway, all the regulars, thanks for tuning in. Welcome back. You know that without you, there really is no show, no reason to do one. So we appreciate it. We will, of course, have a trivia question. But for any of you new people that are hearing it for the first time, whether on purpose or by accident, please stick around for a while. I promise you, you'll learn something. Maybe sometimes it's something you didn't really want to know, but that's irrelevant. You will still learn something in the course of an hour. And I remind everybody that there is no reason whatsoever to miss a show under any circumstances, because if you find that you have missed one, all you have to do is go to our website, VanWeeFinancial.com, and go down the pages a little bit, and you'll see radio shows. And by what day do they usually get posted?
We post them on Monday afternoons, and you can get those also from, well, one from our website, but also from anywhere you get your podcasts. So we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Stitcher, we're on SoundCloud, we're pretty much everywhere. So if you can't find it on your site, let me know, and I'll get it on there.
And you should know that we're so considerate to our friends that when we post the podcast, we strip out the commercials so that you don't have to listen your way through a used commercial.
Talk about a bargain. You get an hour's worth of radio in only 42 minutes.
And the price, it's on us.
That's right.
You can't beat it. All right. We're going to spend quite a lot of time, I imagine, today on the market wrap because there was so much going on. We might as well dig into it.
Well, I brought a word of the week, and it's whew. It could have been so much worse.
Can you spell that?
I've spelled it W-H-E-W, but I have no idea if that's even close.
Actually, that's pretty good.
All right.
That's a sort of a relief with an exclamation mark.
Pretty much, yeah.
And maybe followed by a question mark.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
It was a crazy week. And it might be funny to say that when the Dow dropped almost 250 points, but it really could have been so much worse.
Oh, yes.
It was ugly. A rally on Thursday and Friday brought the NASDAQ back to back in the black for the week, actually, and erased pretty sizable losses on the S&P and the Dow. When it was all said and down, the Dow shed 0.9%, the S&P just 0.3%. Yeah.
All said and down?
Did I say that?
It sounded like it.
Maybe I did.
That's very clever, actually.
But the NASDAQ actually eked out a 0.5% gain. So looking month to date, which doesn't include Monday, we're actually positive across the board for October, which is kind of remarkable considering the week we had.
It is remarkable, and October has one thing going for it that you should all remember. It is not, as many people think, the worst month of the year.
No, it is the most volatile.
But yes, it is by far the most volatile. In fact, the spread for most months averages about 6.4%, and it's about 8.25% in October. But that doesn't mean that that's going to cause a big down. You just never know. But be ready for the roller coaster because it's
right.
Coming.
Well, no, it's already here. Yeah. So the reason for the big drop this week was the ISM manufacturing and non-manufacturing reports that came out earlier in the week. The manufacturing report, which represents less than 30% of the total economy, showed that it showed contraction for the second straight month. Then the non-manufacturing report, which is much larger, over 70% of the economy, had been showing signs of really strong expansion for quite some time. It showed less strong expansion, and the market really freaked out. Now, keep in mind that the report still showed that the services sector is expanding, and it's only a one-month reading, but the market took it as the imminent recession is finally here, and we're all going to die. And
yes, well, we're going to tell you a lot of things that you haven't heard anywhere else, too.
So the U.S. market was actually one of the better performers on the week, kind of been the trend lately, but most international markets dropped moderately during the week. The U.K., Sweden, and India were three of the largest decliners, heading down more than 3%, while Hong Kong and China, which saw escalating tensions this week, actually held up much better. I was quite surprised by that. I thought they would really take a beating because there was nothing but negative headlines coming out of that region this week.
Our sister country did well. New Zealand.
Okay.
Why?
I don't know.
I don't know whose sister it is either. But.
Mexico actually saw a 2% gain this week, while Taiwan and New Zealand increased about 1%. So I did. Yeah, that was one that I had noticed.
Yeah, Mexico. Well. Mexico could be gaining just on the strength of the pressure now being felt in the House to do the USMCA.
Maybe. I still don't think it's going to happen this year, but
and I still think it
we'll
will
see. It's a coin flip, I guess. So despite the economic data being mixed for the week, there were some bright spots. Some of these bright spots directly contradicted the doom and gloom being highlighted by the ISM manufacturing report. One, for instance, was the market manufacturing PMI, which came in at a 51, which was in line with expectations. And then we have the durable goods orders that increased by 0.2%, and by 0.5% if you strip out the volatile transportation sector. The durable goods reading is actually hard data, where the ISM reading is actually a sentiment based off of surveys of people in the manufacturing industry. So I put more credence to the durable goods orders because that's hard data. When you look at sentiment, it can be swayed by what's going on in Washington, by what's happening with the China trade war. People are vulnerable to answering surveys based on how they're feeling at some time, whether or not the data backs that up. So,
well, I've got another one.
Okay.
What happened on September 16th?
I'm not sure.
GM went on strike.
Okay.
You've just had a half a month with one of the world's biggest corporations on strike. You think the manufacturing numbers are going to be skewed just a little bit recently?
Perhaps that could play a small part in it, but I don't think it would swing the index from expansion to contraction.
Well, how about the statisticians adding durable and non-durable goods to the manufacturing number and not correcting for it month to month, which they did and didn't tell anybody? See all the things that I'm getting at? I'm looking for the intelligent life, and you got to look at the right sources these days.
Yeah, I think there's a strong chance that sentiment is really weighing heavily on those ISM readings, though.
And then there's the media and a bunch of other things. But when we get back, we're going to tear apart the jobs report.
For sure.
Which you've heard, and probably on the same page, you have heard it was miserable and that it was fantastic. And yeah. The truth of the matter is somewhere in between, as always, but definitely leaning toward fantastic for many, many reasons. We'll get into some of the things you've heard, some of the things you haven't heard. There's a lot more to say this week because what's going on out there is going on for reasons political, not reasons economic. And when that happens, you know, A, it's short term, and B, it's going to cause a lot of people to worry. I don't want you all worrying. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after a short break. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
One of the things that we want to talk about today is, in the stupidity realm, the wealth tax that's being proposed by several people. I've got some information on that, but I've also got a trivia question about it. For those of you who may not be familiar with the concept, the wealth tax means that you get taxed on the things you already own, have bought, and paid for, And most of them are not sitting in cash. They could be in stocks and bonds. They could be in equipment. They can be in almost anything, which means in order to pay a tax on those items, you have to come up with cash from somewhere else or from a sale of those items. I'm going to dig into that a little bit later. Well, I want to finish up the market wrap first, but here's the trivia question brought to you, as always, by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And a reminder, you can call us at 222-8255. Exactly 12 countries once had a wealth tax, and that's in the reasonable number of years for modern history. How many countries today still have one? So your bracket is between 0 and 11 because I'm telling you, it's less than the 12 that it was. So it's a simple whole number between 1 and, I'm even going to give you the 1. Adam guesses none. And I said, no, there are still some. So it exists out there. How much does it exist? All right, back to the market. The jobs report that was so heavily conflicted in the media, you want to dig into that a little bit? I'll colorize some of it.
Yeah, so there was a lot of information about the employment data this week. There was the ADP report. We had the continuing claims, initial jobless claims, and then the headline, you know, the government report that everyone really focuses on. Mm-hmm. The ADP was first. That came out at 135. It was slightly under the 140,000 that was expected. So anytime you're within 1 to 10% even on these estimates, yeah, I consider it you hit it. I mean, 5,000 is really nothing. So that one was pretty much on target. Initial jobless claims came in at 219,000, and the expectation was 215,000. So it was 4,000 higher. Again, I call that dead on. I mean, these are estimates, people. They're up or down 5,000 doesn't even make a difference.
I love to use the term rounding error, and sometimes I mean it.
Yeah. I mean, they'll probably get revised next month one way or the other.
Well, look what happened. You'll get into the revisions.
Exactly.
You'll see exactly what he means in a minute.
And then continuing claims came in slightly better than expected, but again, within the margin of error, so pretty much on target. And then we saw non-farm payrolls on Friday morning came in at 136,000 versus the expectation
strangely
of
145,000,
which does not always happen.
That's the closest I've ever seen them.
Yeah, they're not. There's usually some disparity.
And there's a reason. One counts nothing but private payrolls.
Right.
The other one throws in government.
So along with that slight miss, which was more or less on target, the unemployment rate came in at a 50-year low of 3.5% versus the expectation of 3.7%. So what does that all mean? And I know this is where you're gonna have some comments, but to me, we're almost at full employment. I mean, I don't care how many jobs were created last month, who is going to fill them?
Exactly.
Everybody's working. I mean, there isn't enough people right now, and the only way that we can increase that is for people coming back in the workforce to allow educated immigrants to come and fill these jobs, or to graduate more college students that can fill these jobs. But outside of that,
and remember,
where are they going to come
from? Every day of every month, there's about 10,000 of us that are turning 65, 66, 67, like that. And some of these people are retiring every single month.
Yep.
So in order to break even, we got to replace them.
Yeah, every single day, really. So you're talking about 300,000 a month.
You got a replacement, there's about, I think it's 193,000 retirements last month. So some people are working a little longer because they can, they make a lot of money, whatever.
Yeah.
But that, you got to go up to that number to get to zero.
It's ironic, for the longest time people weren't retiring because the market was down.
Now
they're not retiring because they're making
some
so
fun.
Much money.
Yeah.
So how things have changed in 10 years.
Yes.
So I know you have some more comments about that jobs number. So why don't you fill it in?
All right. What you won't be told on pretty much anywhere but here. When the Friday numbers come out from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the headline numbers, we all call it that 136,000, is what you hear. And then the media jumps on it. Oh, my God, this is devastating. It's surely a sign that the recession is coming. You'll hear that R word a million times on a number like that.
And I know I've said this all the time, but I'm going to say it again. The most certain you can be that a recession is not coming is when you hear every media outlet telling you the recession is coming.
It's absolutely
true. It will
true.
Not be that clear. It never is.
In fact, they're easiest to say there's a recession right after they stop, because that's about when the numbers catch up.
Exactly.
So whenever anybody assures you that there's one coming, you can be assured that they have reasons other than economic facts.
If it were that easy to predict, it would be a whole lot easier to be successful as a stock picker, an investor, all of that. So it's just not as easy as they make it sound.
But the household survey by the BLS showed 391,000 people went back to work last month. That's because that picks up the self-employed. And in the last two or three months, the self-employed numbers have been astronomical. A lot of those are people who take a contract with an employer so that the employer gets to know them and vice versa. And if they finish it successfully, many of them wind up on the payroll of the company. Some of them just like to work that way. Adam's got a lot of friends who would much rather do contract work than work for an employer.
Oh, yeah. It's a big trend in my generation and the generations below me. The 1099 employee is kind of the employee of the future.
Yes. Also, you'll never hear that 136,000 jobs from the employer report, they also snuck in another 41,000 increases for the 2 months before that. So that you might argue that logically it was up 181,000, which would not have made much fun for the headline writers of the world. Also, we've got a few other little goodies. Black unemployment stayed the same at the lowest it's ever been, but Asian unemployment, teenage unemployment, groups like that
Hispanic.
Are continuing to go down and down and down. The unemployed people, number of unemployed in this country, dropped by 275,000 last month, and 31,000 people who were working part-time because they couldn't find full-time work before went full-time during the month. Now, you add those up, and what you've got is one healthy job market, really healthy. So if you don't hear things like this, it doesn't mean they don't occur, but I want you to know that everything you're hearing, it boils down to three words that I've used so very often when I tell people about the things that they're reading and hearing. Consider the source. If the source is NBC, CBS, CNN, that source is not reliable when it comes to anything about Trump because they are on the powwow. They powwow and then they go on the rampage to get rid of Trump any way they can. So you're hearing now nothing but impeachment talk, nothing but. But there is no impeachment. They haven't started one, and they won't. Why won't they? If Nancy Pelosi could get 218,000 votes for impeachment, he'd already have been impeached. She can't because there are not people to do it. That's just one of the little aspects out there. Nobody will tell you the impact of the GM strike. Now, if you think the GM strike is limited to 55,000 people on a picket line or something like that, you need a lesson in supply chain management. I was an automotive supplier for many, many years in my little stamping factory, and I'm here to tell you, when they shut down, you hear a lot more shutdowns and layoffs and postponements in the companies that supply components to GM than anybody will ever talk about. So if there's a little bit of a blip in the numbers regarding manufacturing, there's a darn good reason for it. How long will this last? I have absolutely no idea. Unfortunately, labor's feeling its oats right now because things are pretty good, and they might just be trying to set an example for Ford, Chrysler, and everybody else. So I have no prediction to make on that, except that I doubt if it'll happen today or tomorrow. But it could. You never know. When the union gets tired of paying all the fringe benefits, because after a certain amount of time, the company stops paying them and the union picks it up from their strike fund. And when they start watching that strike fund go down and down and down, they're going to have a big incentive to do something and do it right. These people are doing okay. That's all I can tell you. Anyway, some of those things are things that are very important for everybody to know, that things are never quite as bad as they seem by listening to the talking heads. So after the break, we're going to do some other goodies. And not the least of which will be some crazy headlines. But then I want to talk about the real ramifications of a wealth tax. Why is Wall Street all of a sudden saying Elizabeth Warren is not a tolerable idea, not a tolerable commodity?
Well,
because they know what a wealth tax means.
I don't. Well, that's just one of the reasons. I don't think I have enough fingers to count all the reasons that she would be terrible for the economy. But
I'm not just picking on her. I'm picking on her because after Bernie's little incident with his heart this week, I think the chances of Warren taking over the leadership are about 100% right now. And any one of them who's proposing a wealth tax should understand the repercussions and ramifications of a wealth tax on society. Again, there were 12 countries that once had one. How many remain? It's a number between 1 and 11. Right after the break, we'll continue with that and get into some of the purely economic and pocket-picking things about this. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Adam Van Lee.
Trivia question still open, again, brought to you by First Coast Alarm. 12 countries once had a wealth tax, and how many remain today? And as always, there's a lesson in what we bring to you for these things. I see a phone ringing, too. Okay, I want to talk a little bit about a wealth tax. Wealth tax has been brought to you by such political notables as Elizabeth Warren and others.
Wait. Bernie Sanders actually, he's a super wealth tax.
Super wealth.
It's better than a wealth tax.
Well, yeah, but he doesn't dislike millionaires anymore.
Because he isn't.
Yeah. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning, fellas.
How goes it?
All right, pretty good.
Good.
Just hanging out, listening to y'all in the garage. Want to take a shot at your trivia question.
Shoot.
I'm going to go with 3.
Why would you do that?
Well,
just because you like to be right?
Yeah. I was thinking a little more towards 0, but, you know.
That was Adam's guess. Yep. And that's why I took it off the table so that people have a better chance. I figured the first person's guess is probably going to be wrong. Do you remember when France did this? It wasn't long ago. It was probably within 2 years ago, I think, would be Adam.
Maybe a little longer than
longer. But what's his name? Jean Depardieu, the actor. Yeah. First thing he did was pack up and move to Belgium. And apparently he's very successful. So they didn't like that very much. And a lot of other countries have found that the estimates for the revenue increase from a wealth tax never really quite panned out. So 10 have already gotten, or 9 have already gotten rid of it as a bad idea, and there are 3 left, and I would not be surprised if they just peter out one by one. You know, if imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, would you rather imitate success or failure?
No, absolutely, success.
But Warren and Sanders and all those folks, they want to imitate failure, and I don't understand it. It's going to be the same here as it would be anywhere else. If you want to take that money from the wealthiest people, they're going to go to Monaco or something like that. It's the simplest formula in the world. Anyway, yeah, nice job. you may have been a just off the top of your head guess, but it was a darn good one.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Well, I'm going to put you on hold, and Alan will get your address, and we'll send you a little something from Mr. Bales.
Okay, thanks, Ken Bales.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, Ken was out.
Thanks, guys.
Ken was out of my house last night fixing my alarm.
Really?
And did a great job. He's great.
Yeah, and very personal, the service.
Absolutely.
And when they leave, it's as clean or cleaner, neater,
no doubt,
than it was.
Very professional.
Yeah.
Also, I have a backup trivia question.
Oh, good.
What is the most tax-friendly state in the United States? And if you can answer that, we'll figure out something that we'll send to you as well.
Does it have to be a state, or could it be D.C.?
Nope.
Because D.C. wouldn't even
D.C.
That wouldn't be in my top 25 guesses.
Yeah, it's one of the states.
All right, that's a good one. And you're going to go out and buy a Publix card and send it to the winner, right?
I'll charge you for it, but yeah.
How does that work? I'm not sure. All right, anyway, the trivia question and the answer sort of leads into what I'm saying, but what happens with the wealth tax is that you take money from the rich people, and the rich people are the people who ultimately employ a lot of people. How many people does Zuckerberg employ? How many does Warren Buffett employ? Bill Gates, on and on and on. That money is not sitting in a bank account. Callers go first, and we have. Good morning, Paul.
The most tax-friendly state would probably be New Hampshire. No sales tax, no income tax.
Great guess, and that actually is in the top 10. It's number 10, ooh, but it is not number
one. One better than that? See, I don't even know this one. He's pulling this out of his hat for me, too. Great guess.
Okay.
We appreciate it. Keep listening. You'll get it.
I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you. Those people use their wealth to create jobs, create income, create more wealth. The problem with people who don't know the first thing about economics is that they believe that the economy of the country is a pie. That pie fits in a pie dish that's X size. They believe that if you take something from one part of the pie, then it has to pile on the other part, and they do not allow for the pie to expand. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning.
Alaska.
Oh, another
Alaska.
Another great guess. Alaska actually checks in at number 5. So,
see, now that would have been my next guess, too. Yeah. I'm color me surprised. There's not only one ahead of it, there's 4 ahead of it.
Yep.
We appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, I'll be listening. I want to know.
All right.
Great.
Thanks.
Good morning, Jim.
Good morning.
We lost you. Just call
the quiz.
There we go. Yeah, go ahead.
Hello?
Yep.
I'm going to guess Alaska since they have no income tax and even pay people tax money.
You didn't hear the last caller. The last caller guessed Alaska. I'm going to give you a free guess on top of that.
Alaska's
5, by the way.
Number 5.
Number 5.
Most tax-friendly, I'll take a shot at Texas.
Texas, let's see, did they make the top 10? I don't believe, nope, they didn't make the top 10, unfortunately.
Wow. Okay, I'm getting as surprised as all the callers are.
Yeah, it's a good question, obviously.
Keep listening, we'll get it. Thank you so much. Love it. Anyway, if you're going to tax billionaires, you're going to tax away their ability to increase the size of the pie that we call our U.S. economy. Over time, that'll become contractionary. Now, if you want a contracting economy, if you want more people on welfare and dependent on the government, oh, wait, I just solved that problem. Why are they supporting it? There you go, just like that. One of the supporters, although he's not, this guy's conflicted. We all know who Mark Zuckerberg is, right? Mr. Facebook. Elizabeth Warren on the left and some others on the right are talking about breaking up Facebook and the other big social media places because they're operating very monopolistically. And Zuckerberg has said absolutely no way to Elizabeth Warren being in there. So he'll be pouring a lot of money into defeating her should she get the nod. That doesn't mean he loves Trump, by the way. But his net worth, the most recent number I could find, is $66.9 billion. So he's interviewed the other day, and he comes up with this one. At some level, no one deserves to have that much money. Now, in case you think that you might have missed something in that line, I'm going to read it again. At some level, no one deserves to have that much money.
I have two things to say about that. One, I can't say on the radio. The other one is that this is what we call virtue signaling.
Yes.
He doesn't mean that at all, but he wants you and me and everybody else to think that he is so sincere about that. But when it comes time to put his money where his mouth is, what is he doing about that? He could give away that money. He could donate it.
Look
he
at Warren Buffett and Bill
taxes.
Gates.
Exactly.
Hundreds of billions of dollars worth of net worth. Where is it going when they're gone?
Just, I mean,
charity.
Which is great. And I respect that immensely.
Absolutely.
But then don't sit there and tell me that no one deserves that, and because he does deserve it. He did create this incredible company.
Or as a wise old man once said, don't pee on my leg and tell me it's raining. Good morning, Chuck.
Wyoming.
Chuck nailed it.
All right.
Yep.
Oh, you cost Adam a gift card. You got Chuck's address, don't you?
What's that? Yeah. Yeah. Well, go ahead and collect it again.
Okay, I'll put you on hold for a moment just to be sure.
The reason is, according to Kiplinger, is that they have no state income tax. They have an effective income tax rate of zero. Average state and local tax is 5.32%. Average property tax, $635 per $100,000 in home value.
Wow.
And gas and taxes and fees, only 24 cents per gallon.
Wow. No wonder.
Yep.
Nice job, Mr. Chuck. We appreciate it. I'll put you on hold.
And Florida checked in at number 3.
Oh, good.
Yep. Oh, I'm sorry, number 4. 3 was Tennessee.
Okay. Well, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Do you remember when Tennessee tried to pass an income tax?
No.
That governor was out of there so fast. It was just amazing. It was like a magic trick how fast he exited the scene. They've had their share of really goofy politicians over the years for a state that's managed to stay reasonably user-friendly, I guess. All right, we've got a couple games to play when we get back. Don't go anywhere. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
We've been chuckling a little over the great search for intelligent life. I found it, though, folks. I actually found it. You know where it is?
No clue.
It's listening to this radio show right now.
Okay.
So thank you, all people. I feel so much better knowing that there are people out there with that head. I just got a text from a client also, and she said, I got it right, but I'm driving and couldn't call. There's lots of them out there. A lot of good heads going on. I like it. A follow-up word on, by the way, this segment brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance. You can call Troy at 662-9794. A couple of follow-up remarks about Mr. Zuckerberg. His $66.9 billion net worth would be taxed at 3% under Warren's proposal, which would cost him about $2 billion a year.
Wow.
Which, you know, we got 67, you give up 2, you still got 60.
What?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Seeing if you do that.
Oh, I
65.
Sorry, missed the prompt.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Anyway, if he gave that, wrote a check to Uncle Sam, how long would it last them? 3.7 hours. Hours. Now, you add Gates and Buffett and a few other real big ones, you might get an entire day's revenue out of all these people taxed at that level.
At the current rate of spending.
Current rate, yes.
If we implement all the new social programs that they are talking about.
The 93 on the green.
Right.
Green
and
New
then
Deal.
Yeah. Medicare for all. And, yeah. And just the it goes on and on. But that one day drops to a few hours again in a hurry.
Yeah. Well, it's so important. I was just looking at a couple of these things from my past. In 1970, the headlines were Ice Age by 2000. 1980, peak oil in 2000. I get a whole bunch of them. I pull them out of my hat every now and again. All right, Adam came up with a list of questions, or a list of, what, topics?
Yeah,
and
10 things that happened this week.
He wants to hit me up with them and see if I think they're good news or bad news for the economy, and I promise you, I have absolutely no clue what's about to happen.
All right, number one, the recent violence in Hong Kong, it escalated this week. What do you think about that?
Ultimately good, because it's going to cause enough world shaming, I guess, that they're going to have to back down. They got up to shooting a 14-year-old, I believe it was, and that's kind of like Tiananmen Square. There's got to be a straw that breaks a camel's back, and it's got to lead to a resolution, which will ultimately be good because it'll allow us to get the trade deal done with them, we hope. So that is purely a glass half full look at it.
Okay. I mean, I think you could easily make the case on the other side of that
as
easily. Well.
Put me on the debate team and assign me one side or the other.
Yeah, I could make that argument either way.
Yep.
All right. Zero commission ETFs, which Schwab came out with, and stocks. Schwab came out with it this week. TD followed, and then E-Trade followed shortly after that. Good or bad?
What percentage of the revenue is it for these companies?
Well, it varies greatly. Mm-hmm. For TD, it was especially high. It was something in the 20s, and their stock dropped about 20-something percent that day. So it did not react positively from a shareholder perspective, but from a client perspective, what do you think?
Fabulous.
Yeah,
of course. It's not what you make. It's what you keep that counts.
As one client put it this week, I don't really care about all those other people.
He said it a bit more colorfully, yeah, but well, you get the picture.
For radio version, but yeah.
Yeah, hallelujah, folks. You can do it yourself, or you can use people like us, fee only. That what Adam's talking about is the trading fees that they call them commissions in the world of TD. And Fidelity didn't go, by the way. They're still $4.95 on holding.
Right. They have not.
But Schwab did this, TD did this, and E-Trade did this. And when they were trading equities in particular, that's been waived down to zero now, which is just, to me, we use mostly trades that don't have a cost anyway.
Right.
But this is a wonderful thing. When you don't have to pay as much to do the thing you're going to do anyway, hallelujah. The problem some people see is it's going to cause people to be more frequent traders. And if I say, if you're getting down to that level of manipulation on people, you're doing something wrong.
Well, and it didn't change the capital gains tax laws. I mean, if you're a buy and hold trader or buy and hold investor, mm-hmm. it doesn't change your strategy hardly at all.
I'm far more concerned about the changes they're trying to make to ETFs that would make them not as tax friendly. And I'll get into that one of these days, too. I'm much more worried about that than the 695 and the 495s that are going away. But ultimately good.
The ISM Manufacturing Index comes in the lowest since 2009. And we talked about this a little bit earlier, but ultimately, do you think it's good or bad?
It's a manipulated data point that is, in my book, completely useless. The orders are up sharply this past month, and 3 out of 4 of the most recent months, it's been up. I think this is an outlier. And it should be taken with a grain of salt, and that grain of salt should be thrown over your shoulder and forgotten.
All right, number 4, Bernie has a heart attack.
I never wish a heart attack on anybody.
No, obviously not.
And he seems to be pulling through fine. I wish he would use it to look in the mirror and say, I'm too old for this nonsense.
Yeah, I think that the voters are going to tell him that in the upcoming straw polls. And
I honestly believe you could be that old. But you can't be that old and constantly angry.
He is a very angry man.
He is. Yeah. Elizabeth Warren is desperate, and Bernie Sanders is angry. And you can't live your life that way, people.
Yeah.
Look at the good around you.
All right.
My goodness.
In a related event, Hillary Clinton's odds of winning the nomination just passed Bernie's. Good or bad?
Bring it on.
All right. Number 6, a 500-point drop in the Dow on Wednesday.
Yeah, so what?
Okay, fair. Number 7, ISM non-manufacturing lower than expected.
Growth.
What is that? Oh, it's still growing.
It's above 50.
Yeah.
Well above 50.
Okay. Number 8, 400-point swing to the positive on Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay.
Figures.
No thoughts.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hit a wrong button. JC.
Hey, how's it going?
Wonderful. How are you?
Fairly well. Hey, I've been listening to the show. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about socialism, capitalism. When I was in high school back in the 70s and 80s, we were required to take this class called Business and Free Enterprise.
Wow.
And you had 3 routes. You had college prep, I think. Well, you actually had 4, college prep, general, business, or VOTEC.
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're college prep, you still had to take it. I took it, and that's what I think the what the problem is with the baby boomers and capitalism is that we don't have capitalism very much in this country, except like you can see it pretty much in the cell phone industry, but most of the other industries we have, it's all called crony capitalism, which is not free enterprise. It's where the government still chooses the winners based on how much money these corporations give them.
It's true.
I think that's why we're moving towards socialism, is because the millennials see this crony capitalism, and until we drain the swamp, we're not going to have free enterprise, which should be, you know, free enterprise, not crony capitalism.
You are precisely correct.
So, JC, I agree with you 100%. If you look at big companies, where I think that capitalism really exists is in small companies like ours. Mm-hmm. We're free to go out and do whatever we want and try and make money within a certain set of guidelines and rules. Yeah. But we are not, the government doesn't interfere very much in our business outside of sort of telling us, here are the general guidelines that you need to adhere to. And I think that it still exists on a much smaller scale. But when it comes to the Facebooks of the world, I 100% agree with you.
Yep. And you have nailed it. I wish people would have to take courses like that again. You know, our kids today are ignorant, and I mean that exactly the way it's defined. They don't know. They're ignorant. And the difference,
and it's
as
not
you,
their fault. It's the teacher's fault.
Nope. And there's a big difference, as you know, between ignorant and stupid. Ignorant can be cured.
Yes.
Stupid, you're stuck with. That's it. Thanks
Great
for the
show.
Call. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we certainly do.
Boy, he nailed that one. All right, got time for another one or two?
Yeah. So the last two were 136,000 new jobs added to the economy this month.
Plus another 45, that makes 181, 391,000 on the household. This was a banner month for job growth.
And lastly, the unemployment rate hits 3.5%, a 50-year low. Can it go any lower?
That's bad.
Enough people to fill jobs? Yeah.
But the JOLTS number is going to come out in a week or two, right?
Yes, that is correct.
As will earnings season pick up. So you're going to have some things to look for. The JOLTS number will tell you there are more jobs available than people to take them. We have to correct that. If you want the economy to grow, you got to get out there and get a job and help it. So if you don't have one and you want one, get out there. If you can't find a job today, you might want to think about retraining yourself, because they're out there. All right, thanks for listening. Thanks for the participation today. This was a really fun show. We'll see you next week. This is the Benway Financial Hour.